session number 23141, reel 2.
Mr. Horton, reel 2. Did you speak to this Austrian captive?
I did, yes.
What did he say?
He said, "You'll be my prisoner in a few days."
What was your response to that?
"You'll be dead before then."
Was it?
I don't know. I wasn't with him. We moved to a position in Galatas. And I don't know what happened to the... We all split up when the evacuation order came. We all had to make our way to Sfakia.
What did you feel about these enemy who were dropping from the skies?
Well, I mean, it was such a surprise that we'd never heard of... I never heard of paratroopers, you know, at that time. It never dawned on me. We thought they'd, you know, come in from the sea.
Yeah. What happened to you at Galatas?
We were in their position there. We were being bombed, and there was this German, like our Lysander, flying around. He was putting his machine gun up and down, but none of us got hit. And we were there for only a few days, and then the order came to evacuate.
But what were you doing during those few days?
Nothing. There was no enemy there. We were just in this olive thing. There was a big field in front of us, and we could see anything what came, but nobody ever came. No. And we just got the order to retreat.
Were you surprised at those orders?
Yeah. We hadn't... They weren't here. The Germans weren't there. So it just came as retreat.
What did you take with you on the journey?
I only had the rifle.
Any supplies of food and water?
No food, no water. When we got to a place to water, we filled our water bottles, and no food at all. Until we got to Suda Bay, and they were burning it, and we had to...
At Suda Bay,
yeah. When we walked back to Suda Bay, they were actually burning the stuff. And we managed to scramble a bit of food. I got a tin of Lars golden syrup, a small tin there, and a bit of some biscuits. That's all. And that was... That was my last food for quite a while.
So what did you do for water and drink?
There's plenty of water, plenty of streams, you know. You can fill up with a stream anywhere, you know. Her water was pure. Yeah.
And were you attacked on the way to Sfakia?
Yes, they were machine gunning everywhere where they could. You had to go very, very carefully. And we stopped the other side, still by the water, stopped in that position there for a while with some Australians, and witnessed a little, it might have been a minesweeper, I don't know what it was, very small. And he had one gun on the back, I don't know what it was, a pom-pom it was. And he was being attacked by about 20 aircraft, and he was still firing, and they weren't paying any attention to us, so they were attacking this little boat. Then we got orders to move off again, and we did, and we finished up near Sfakia, the evacuation place. Our major and that they formed us up again, told us we're going to be a rear guard. All the others were going through, and we were in this position, and We stayed there. They were bombing and machine gunning the village. They weren't touching us. We were high up and away from the village because we were told we were not going to be evacuated. You're going to be taken prisoner. And on the day before, the major came and told us that at 11 o'clock tomorrow, the island will capitulate and you'll be prisoners of war. Which, 11 o'clock, we destroy your weapons, and we waited for them, and the Germans came in and marched us off.
So you were captured?
Captured, yeah, on the 1st of June.
How did the first Germans treat you?
All right, they weren't bad. And they marched us back halfway and put us in this big field at the night, and in the morning. I had dysentery at the time. It was very strange, you know. When you've got no food and you've got dysentery, you've been eating stuff perhaps you shouldn't have been. And anyway, they formed us up, and when I was on the last set person to be there, you know, on the end, and the German with his gun was walking alongside me, and he spoke very good English, which surprised me, better than and he got talking to me, and he was a paratrooper which survived. And we'd heard that Max Smelling, the boxer before the war, was one of their officers. And I said to him, I said, Max Smelling was one of your brave officers.
He pointed his thumb down.
Hmm? Yeah. He went, he wasn't very good. He said they complained of diarrhoea, sickness and that. They had to send him back. I said to him, by the way, I said, I have got diarrhoea. I said, well, if you have got to go, go and then catch up, you know, just like that. And I went after him, talking away there, and I said, I've got to go. He said, go and then catch up.
What did he mean about Max Schmeling? Can you explain?
I mean that he was yellow belly. Yeah.
That he was making excuses?
Yeah, he was making excuses. He said he wouldn't. And I saw a village, so I thought, I'll go there and get something to eat and drink, you know. And I did. And of course, when I got there, they started giving me wine and food and that. And of course, I was after. I never went back to the line. And so I thought, oh, well, this will do I'm not going to go to a prisoner of war if I can stop here. And next day, the Germans pulled right in. And I was sat there, straight back in where all our boys were again, in the prison camp. There's only a barbed wire around a hill at the back with all the little vines, and a hill to the front. And in the front was some bushes with a stream running alongside of it. And very few Germans. And we were there, we got hardly any food. In fact, the Australians, they killed a donkey, lured it to the vent, and then got over it and killed it. And we had that, and we all stewed up. And anyway, they used to let us out once a day, get drink and water, and have a wash if you wanted to. And I said to Marine Meller, a mate, he was a good mate of mine, I said, how do you fancy escaping with me? I said, I know there are feeders out there. I said, because I've been there. I said, all we need to do is, when they just shouting back, we'll stay hidden in the bushes and wait for half an hour and then see what it's like and then go. Yeah. And this is what we did. They never counted us out, never counted us in. And this we did, and we shot away up the hill and away to the first village. And they gave us egg and chips, you know, and bread. And then they said, we take you up the mountains, which they did. Took us up the mountain, and we in that mountain there was 101 Australian and New Zealanders, never been captured. They'd evidently been in Retimo, and nobody told them about the surrender. When it did come, they just went up in the mountains, and they found them in this, formed them into this unit up there. And because it was getting too big, they said, we'll have to move because we'll drain all their food. We moved along, I don't know whereabouts it was, because we didn't know the places, you know, and the mountains. And there's a village on a windy at the top of this mountain area on the side. There was a village, and they were feeding us, you know, and it was very hot then. Must have been about August. And we were quite happy there. But all of a sudden, they heard the motorbikes, the German motorbikes, and they said, Germans are coming. So we had to split up. Well, we split up into, there was 11 of us. I was the only Englishman. There was two New Zealanders, and the rest were Australian. And, Australian. And we got away all right. And we travelled around with those 11 from village. We never stopped in a place too long, because we thought of that, you know. But and we moved along from village until it was October. We traversed quite a bit, you know, of the area, the mountain area, and that. And we'd met up with the partisans at one time, and enjoyed a stay with them. And
what were they like?
Very, very good. They're very good for us. They steal anybody's sheep and kill it for a meal. You know, they had old German Opplers, they called them, German guns, and that, and German ammunition. They had plenty of that.
Were they doing much attacking of the Germans?
Quite a bit, yeah. One of the villages they'd attacked, they killed some Germans there, and the village, they'd wiped the whole village out. Even a blind girl, they'd shot her in, but they killed a lot, yeah. Silver Mackenzie was the sergeant of this unit, Australian sergeant. He'd been in the First World War, and he said, I think we'll keep away from this, we don't want to have any trouble with these, you know, we'll go back to. So we went on our own again, and one of us always had to go. All of us never went into a village. We'd get a cave somewhere near a village, and then one of us would go in and ask for, you know, for help, for food and that. And they would, then the villagers would say yes, they would bring it with us. And they would bring you food. And this day, Silver Mackenzie said to me, he said, well, you've led us to a couple of good villages, Vince. He says, you go and have a look, you know, because we're... And I got... no more than about a quarter of a mile from towards the village, when there was a padre and a little Greek boy, you know, and he stopped me, and he spoke in English, and he said, how many of you are you? And I said, there's 11 of us. He said, have you got any food? I said, no, I'm just going. And he spoke in Greek to the boy, and he said, look, he'll bring you food, he'll come back with you, and find out where you are, he'll go and get food and give it to you, all right? Yep, stay there, he said, because I think you'll be away in 3 days' time. Yeah. And,
what kind of a padre do you mean?
A Greek padre, you know, one with those.
A priest.
Hmm?
A priest?
A priest, yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And when I went back and told Silver McKenzie, and he said, you imagine his words? You lousy.
What did you say?
Yeah, you bloody limeys all making things up like that. the boy came, he brought us a nice load of food, and tomorrow we'll bring some more. And then the next day they you come and they led us over this mountain and a couple of miles, and old Silver was saying, I ain't going to do much more of this, you know, because he's got knocking on. Anyway, we got to this pass, they only said, and right then it started taking us down to the sea. And strip off, wear your shoes and that strip off. The boat and the thing to take you out there.
What kind of a boat?
Just a little fishing boat, yeah. Mm. And took us all the way back to Alexander.
What were the crew of the boat like?
British.
Mm. So they weren't Cretans?
No, British. Mm.
Did they say anything to you?
Oh yes, they made us go down below, and they looked like ordinary fishermen, you know. And give us some food for a start.
Were they Royal Navy?
I haven't got a clue.
About how long were you in the boat for?
We landed in Alex the next morning. We had one scare with an aircraft, and he sort of turned the boat, and the back of the boat was a long hawser, and it was doing the miles, but I suppose looked to an airplane, and it was trawling. That's what it was doing. Mm.
Do you know when you arrived in Alex?
On the 4th of December.
What do you think of the Cretans who helped you?
Yeah, they're marvellous people. Marvellous. Yeah. Marvellous people. Yeah.
What condition were you in by the time you got back to Egypt?
Well, we'd been lousy. We had fleas and lice and everything. I could never get rid of them as much as we killed them off over there. It was to get in and shower. Because we never had a wash or a shave from the time we hadn't from the time we left Egypt.
Did you still have a weapon with you?
No. We had to destroy our weapons, you know, when we were captured.
What happened to you then?
Well, when we were
in Egypt.
In Egypt, they took us to HMS Canopus, a naval. Took us to this. To Canopus, and it was a naval place right on the point there, and then we moved to a barracks. I don't know what the name of the barracks was, and we had all had a shower and again there, and then the Aussies took us out in the evening and to their the Australian club, and we fed like lords, you know. Yeah, putting on some weight then, for trying to put it on. And the next day a marine officer came and sent a telegram home to me mother that he arrived safe. We'll get in touch. And this marine officer came and took me and took me right back to the Suez Canal there into this unit. It was a searchlight unit again, but it wasn't. I don't know whether it was the 11th or not, but it was a searchlight unit, and they kitted me out, and then he sent me straight out on leave to Cairo for 2 weeks.
Was it a Royal Marines searchlight unit?
Royal Marines searchlight unit, yes. And when I returned, they sent me to Palestine to join the 11th Royal Marines Battalion.
The same one?
No, this was 11th Battalion, and they were doing raids, commando raids. And so we were doing extensive training there. We were in Palestine, into Jordania and all those places, Dead Sea. We're doing exercises all over there, training. And then we used to go out for practice landings on Cyprus with these, and we used to have two destroyers, the Sikh and Zulu, two tribals, and we used to practice their landings and test their defences on Cyprus with landings. Commando landings. And
so you were now a commando, were you?
Yes, we weren't officially commandos, but we were doing it, the work. They didn't call us commandos, we just called us Marines, you know, 11th Battalion. And when they said to us, we've got something coming off, and we're going to do a special training for this job, and it involved a lot of night firing and things. Suddenly, we put on the ship. I was on the Zulu, put on the ships, and we were told that the landing would be at Tobruk, and we were going to land there, and we had guns and supplies to smash up. We were coming in by the sea, the Long Range Desert, and SAS, and those, and they were coming in by the land. It was going to be these motor boats, motor torpedo boats coming in. So there was, with us was HMS Coventry, a NACAC ship, and this was to be, would have been the night of the 13th of September. And Lieutenant Woods was our section commander, and ours were first flight. That means we were to be the first ones off. Now, all other raids are done, and anything done was done by rowing yourself in from ordinary cutters and whalers, which the Navy used. When we get on the ship there, there's different boats. There's a motor boat with flat bottom boats. We've never been, never seen them. And when they take us up there, and we're the first flight, and we've got to get into these flat bottom boats, and you know, it's going up and down of a ship, very dodgy. The old big whalers, cutters and whalers, were ideal for the job. And we got in, you know, it's quite dark, and as soon as we got about 20 yards, the tow rope broke on ours. We were the first one, there was three behind us, First, our road, tow rope broke, because as they were going over and we were coming up, and of course it snapped, so they had to circle around and pick up the. Then we got another 50 yards, I suppose, and it broke again, and all of a sudden, shelling from the land, shelling. I didn't know, but there was shelling. I didn't know it was our ship or there, but there was a ship hit. And of course, we were all panicking then, you know, opposed landing again. They picked us up again, and we sort of rode a different, went a different sort of course, and we got in, but landed on rocks, you know. And I was a brain gunner. My job was to give a covering fire, you know, and I went straight, as it hit the rocks, I went straight in the water. Managed to drop the gun in the bottom of the boat. But I went in the water, and the boat in front, we had the engine, was revving like I was almost going underneath that. And they cut the engine, and then we were able to get in. And I was about 200 yards out to sea, and getting back, you know. By the time we got back, you know, the others had gone. I had to get the gun and everything. And we couldn't do anything else. We just didn't know where they'd gone. Could see firing all over. And when you get up there, they said, you're going to be a prisoner. I thought, no more. They had no more ammunition or anything. So,
who said you were going to be a prisoner?
The officer, yeah.
Lieutenant Woods?
Mm, yeah, going to be a prisoner. So we decided to... I said to him, look, I've done this before. Let's hide and... There's supposed to be, according to them, there was a submarine a few miles down the road at night who would pick us up. We had a vacuum, only stragglers, you know, when they always said this. And so he came with me, and we stopped in a thing all night.
Stopped in what?
In a cave, you know.
Sort of. Just the two of you?
Two of us, yeah. And in the morning, early morning, I said, come on. And we went right round by the harbour and all rocks, and we actually passed three Italians and went right into right round, and then decided, don't go out into the desert because of the mines. So we go into only high tides, according to what we were told. So we go through, have to go through that camp, get onto the coast the other side. And we walked in there. It was a German camp. So we were taken back to the German headquarters.
So you were captured again?
Yeah.
How did they treat you?
They were all right, the Germans. Yeah. And they marched. I was down below, and he was upstairs, and they couldn't understand why the others were captured the day before, and where they didn't think that we were on from the ship, you know. And when they finally, decided, you know, we had to say we were the same group, and that, and he said, I'm very sorry, but we've got to turn you over to the Italians because it's their war, not ours, and they have all prisoners. And while I was there,